I'm so glad we get to talk now about this new film, Judas and the Black Messiah. I think it's really interesting coming off the conversation we had before the break with Ethan Zuckerman about insurrections, institutions, what happens, how people push when they experience mistrust in government or the failure of other bodies that are responsible for the social contract. Judas and the Black Messiah retells the story of the Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party, its chairman, Fred Hampton. Fred Hampton is played by Daniel Kaluuya. The film depicts the assassination of Hampton, orchestrated by the FBI with the help of an informant. The informant's name was William O'Neill. He's played by Lakeith Stanfield. We're going to talk about what stood out about that movie and how it lays out a microcosm of what we were discussing before with insurrection and institutions, with the Black Panthers as the case example. We're going to invite you to be a part of that conversation again. 800-423-8255. Did you see the film? Do you know the history of Fred Hampton? Were you taught about the Black Panthers? What resonates about any of it for you today, and what's the legacy of how we challenge authority, especially as we grew in our mistrust in institutions in the 60s and 70s? 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us for the conversation, Michael Jeffries, who is the Dean of Academic Affairs and Professor of American Studies at Wellesley College. Michael, welcome back. I'm so excited to talk with you.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited too.
All right, so Michael, I'm going to start by saying I did a whole lot of framing there. I should give you a chance to say whether you agree with that framing or you think I'm wrong.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting question to frame the Panthers as an insurrectionist group, because when you look at their founding and especially some of their initial reasons for forming the organization, they're really well within the bounds of the law and their right to defend themselves. And that's really why the Black Panthers started all of their activities. They were tired of the constant police violence that they were subjected to in Oakland, California, and around the country. And we're really trying to carve out space to live a life of dignity, a life free from poverty, and to maintain the right to protect themselves. That's a little bit different, I think, from the classic definition of insurrection, though many of the issues pertaining to justice and state institutions are certainly applicable.
Would you say that in this film, Judas and the Black Panther, and this, excuse me, Judas and the Black Messiah, not Judas with the Black Panthers, would you say that this film paints Fred Hampton as a revolutionary and a positive revolutionary?
Yes, absolutely. It's a really interesting film because it is not a complete biography of Hampton. It really tells the story of the moment, 1968, 1969, and the kind of dual lives of Fred Hampton and the FBI informant, William O'Neill, who ultimately conspires in a way that leads to Hampton's death. So it's more of a snapshot of that moment and that relationship, because O'Neill was inside the party, working very closely with Hampton and ultimately betraying him. It's not a full-fledged biography, but what it does, especially in some of the early portions of the film, is makes it clear where Hampton stood and the position of the Black Panther Party relative to some of the other organizations that we know from the history of the civil rights movement in this country. And some of the ideological pieces that were introduced to make it quite clear that he is a revolutionary. He describes himself that way in the film. He challenges the logic of slow reform. He challenges other revolutionary logics, like Pan-Africanism, for example, comes under a bit of criticism from Hampton in the film as well. But there's no doubt he's a revolutionary because he embraces economic policies and political policies that are far outside the American mainstream and necessary for the survival of Black Americans in our country.
We've got calls coming in. Are you ready to go to the phones?
Sure.
All right, let's do it. 800-423-8255. We've got Donna on the line from Brockton. Donna, go ahead.
Hi, yes. I was just going to add that this is something that's not taught in high schools or middle school history class, and I think it's very important considering the next few years, 4 years, there's going to be teenagers now who are going to be voting. And I think we, as we talk about the political system and institutions in the last segment, and how we talk about how we're going to basically change things, I think we need to start with the teachers. They make a way bigger impact than we obviously give them credit for, and that's said all the time. And we need to change the education system, including the history books, that talk about these things. I'm 28 years old. I never heard of the Black Panther Party at school. I don't know who Fred Hampton is. I am going to watch the movie, and I think that should speak for itself.
Thanks, Donna. I appreciate that. And I'm going to add one more call here, Michael, because Brian's on the line from Northborough, and Brian's a history teacher. So, Brian, jump in.
Hey, good afternoon, folks. Thanks for taking my call. I'll keep it pretty quick. My wife and I attended the opening showing in our local theater a few weeks ago. I was very excited for this movie. I did a tremendous job, I think, telling this story historically accurately in a way that everybody should understand. The biggest takeaway I had, and I was curious your thoughts on it, was the FBI's involvement at such a high level, the federal government all the way down to the assassination of Fred Hampton. I think it's a really illustrative example of the ingrained racism that we deal with every day, have dealt with since our inception. And maybe part of the reason it's such a difficult hurdle to overcome today, that was just what I took away from it, was that federal government involvement. I just wanted your thoughts.
Thanks for that, Brian. Michael, go ahead.
Yeah, I'll try to take both questions and start with the second question first. I mean, that is one of the things that the film does an incredible job of showing, is how committed the FBI is to disrupting the Black Panther Party, and what a political priority it was for the FBI and the United States federal government. And this is not a surprise when you look at the history of the FBI. I mean, the history of disruption and surveillance when it comes to the Nation of Islam and Malcolm X or Martin Luther King and his colleagues. So it fits right in the tradition of that time with respect to the energy and the intensity with which the FBI approached the civil rights as civil rights movement as a national security issue. On the education piece, I think it's a great point, because one of the initial priorities of the Black Panther Party when they were founded was education. The education of Black folks in particular, because the founders, Bobby Seale, Huey Newton, understood that they couldn't really carve out a path for revolution without self-knowledge first. And it's important that we see that emphasis in education reflected not only in other movements that would advance similar goals, but also in our national program of education, because if we're going to learn from this and really leverage the successes, and there are so many successes of this movement, the commitment to public health, for example, the free breakfast program, for example, that have been co-opted in some ways by government institutions, we have to really understand the educational piece, and we can't avoid looking at the severe criticisms and whitewash the history.
So that's interesting. And I think it goes back to our first caller, too. Producer Paris Alston and I were talking this morning as we were getting ready to speak with you. And we were talking about the fact that this is a movie that tells this story and tells it in a way that probably wouldn't have even gotten made 5 years ago, especially the level of criticism about the government and this the presentation of the way in which the Black Panthers in Chicago were fulfilling pieces of the social contract, like the breakfast program. What, I mean, at one level, this seems obvious, but let's engage with it. What has changed that this is the story we're telling this way for the first time, really, now?
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, I think the obvious answer here is the Black Lives Matter movement and the recognition that if we don't uproot these problems, which are historically rooted problems, and understand them in all of their historical complexity and rootedness, we're never really going to get to a place where we have justice in America. So I think that the Black Lives Matter movement continues to lay bare some of the disparities, inequities, and injustices. And that kind of laid the ground, seeded the ground for projects like this to maybe reach audiences that they hadn't before. And still, right, if you watch this film and you know a little bit more about the history, you're going to feel like this is just a very small appetizer to what is a much deeper and longer story of the Black Panther Party. I mean, you get some of the history of the party and their accomplishments and priorities in the movie, but really it's a movie about these two central characters. So one of my great hopes is that people, of course, relish the performances of Sandfield and Kaluuya, but that they take this opportunity to find out more. And I know the producers of the film have produced materials and other such things that will encourage that educational piece just as much as the entertainment piece.
And I do want to stay with the educational piece, but I also do want to underscore what you just said, which is the performances by Kaluuya and Lakeith Stanfield are incredible, as is the performance by Dominique Fishback, who plays Deborah Johnson, now known as Akua Njeri, who was Fred Hampton's then fiance. So there is a huge entertainment dimension to this film as well, but there's a lot that we learn. And Michael, one of the things that really struck me is the way the film tells of how Hampton built coalitions. So it depicts the Rainbow Coalition. Specifically, the film features the Young Patriots, who were white, the Young Lords, who were Puerto Rican, and then they have, in the film, a fictionalized gang called the Crowns. Seems they were meant to represent maybe a number of black gangs and black organized groups. They were groups who might normally mistrust each other, but whose shared distrust of the police, of government, brought them together. Here's a little sound where Fred Thompson is addressing a meeting, actually, of the Young Patriots.
We oppressed your people for a long time.
I didn't oppress. And my folks grew up poor. They were sharecroppers.
AKA the overseer.
What if the overseer had banded with the slaves and cut the masters through?
We might not be in this funky ghetto right now.
I bet y'all babies getting the same education.
Y'all paying the same taxes to get your heads whooped in by the same pigs. Ain't that a trip?
And of course, it's Fred Hampton, not Fred Thompson. I'm sorry about that. But so there we go. That coalition building is a really interesting dimension of the story.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that Hampton famously said was, we're not going to fight racism with racism. We're going to fight racism with solidarity. And that's the kind of solidarity that he was speaking about, a cross-racial, cross-ethnic solidarity. The Rainbow Coalition that you described is exactly that. And I think it also points to, again, when you look at the history of the party, what became a serious ideological debate within the Black Panther Party as it matured, and that is how much to foreground racial identity and racial pride, and how much to foreground some of the economic dimensions of political struggle and the necessity of cross-racial solidarity as a means to advance the status of working people and poor people globally. I mean, this became a real point of contention as the party matured into the 1970s, and one that many folks said prevented it from living beyond the 1980s when it was ultimately dissolved.
I want to grab a call here from Hannah in Newton. Hannah, go ahead.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I just want to say that I'm a white woman who grew up in Chicago. I was around at that time. It was a very upsetting time to be a teenager. But I grew up in an integrated neighborhood, and we thought the world of the Black Panthers and that they were going to really help transform America. And I was personally just devastated when that happened.
The assassination, you mean?
Yes. Yes.
Hannah, thanks
for
that.
Thanks. Most horrific thing.
Thanks for that call, Hannah. Michael, here was an organization that was making change, that was doing organizing work on the ground, that was working on education, on food, et cetera. What are the parallels to social movements that you see today? And so where are you seeing sort of the building on the legacy of the Black Panthers, who, of course, and I want to acknowledge this again, at least the story that white people have been told since that time is a very different story about the Black Panthers.
No question. I'm going to start with that last point, because the caller mentioned she was from Chicago, and the story that was told about the Panthers at the time after the assassination occurred, the way that it was reported in the press was very different from the way that the events actually transpired. It was portrayed almost as a gunfight between the Panthers and the police. And when you learn the history, you understand it really wasn't a gunfight at all. It was an assault by the police on the house where these folks were staying. And that's the way the film portrays it. So the kind of the poor teaching is intentional. It's framed in a certain way. And then you asked about the legacy and the ways that these teachings might continue. I mean, I think we see it first and foremost in some of the ideas in the film and the priorities of the Black Lives Matter movement, the ways that they understand police violence, not as an anomaly of the American condition, but as part and parcel of American politics and the American project of controlling Black bodies and Black labor. This is something that the Black Lives Matter movement has laid bare and made quite clear to all of those who want to seriously engage with it, which is that police violence is not a single issue. This is tied to the entire institutional structure of the country, right? So I think that's one thing. And second thing is some of the lessons about the potential weaknesses of the Black Panther Party, weaknesses with respect to gender politics, which aren't really portrayed in the film, but we know from the testimony of women who were involved in the Black Panther Party that it was not necessarily a great place to be an activist if you were a woman, including Elaine Brown, who ultimately became a chairperson in California, has said things along these lines. I think one of the great contributions of the Black Lives Matter movement is that it pushed gender and sexuality to the forefront of the Black liberation struggle in ways that some of the movements of the mid-20th century really had not.
So with that in mind, what do you hope that today's activists, today's revolutionaries, to borrow the term from Ethan Zuckerman in the last segment, even today's insurrectionists in the way he was using the term, what do you hope they would take away from this film and this story of Fred Hampton and the Black Panthers?
Well, I think it's an interesting case. I mean, the film and the story are two different things, right? The film, I think they're going to see a lot about like the power of charisma, for example, the commitment to solidarity, the unglamorous work of very early activist work where they're sharing apartments and small houses, and there's no political celebrity at the very beginning of Fred Hampton's career, but he rises so quickly, and there's a lot of kind of unglamorous work that goes into that rise. So I think they're gonna take little nuggets from the film, but of course, the history is so much deeper than just the film, and they're gonna have to work in a context that's radically different. But I think the turn toward understanding these problems as global in nature, which was really a key point that the Black Panthers embraced as their organization developed, is something that we've already seen happen with the Black Lives Matter movement. And you look at the images that we saw in Europe, in Asia, in South America, during the Black Lives Matter protest, during the summer when we had 100 consecutive days of protests in Portland, Oregon, and in other cities. You had people filling the streets in places across on the other side of the world, like Germany, for example. So I think the global reach is a lesson that I would hope contemporary activists take from this historical period. And the most important thing is, I think we have to understand that Fred Hampton was 21 years old when he was killed. So it's not really for those of us who are from an older generation to tell younger activists how to carve the path. We have to let them build their own tools and their own practices and trust their leadership and their vision.
All right, that is Michael Jeffries, Dean of Academic Affairs and Professor of American Studies at Wellesley. Thank you.
Thank you.